Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Implementing MTSS can be a challenge, especially when it comes to getting everyone on the same page. And that's why we're excited to have Dr. Andrew Shannock join us today. And as a professor of school, in the School of Psychology at Yeshiva University in New York, he's also a sought after expert who works with schools across the country around MTSS. So Dr. Shannock brings a wealth of knowledge on building collaborative teams, improving assessment practices, and tackling real world challenges of MTSS implementation. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Very exciting.
Well, I'll have you just kind of introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your work. I mean, we know that school psychs are a big part of MTSS, but I would love to hear a little bit about your work and what got you into the world of MTSS.
Yeah, thank you again. So it's been about school psychology rather than a professor of psychology.
Oh, true. Yeah.
And that and there is that difference of just those different type of components of psychology. And it's really just those folks who are doing the mental health and academic interventions and support for all the teachers and all the staff and all the kids. So it's as a school psychologist, you get to do the amalgam of everything within the schools, which is nice. Everyone calls us to do things. No one knows what we do, but they know, talk to the school psychologist in so many ways. So I think, so for the last 20 some odd years, I've been being a professor, 20 years at the College of St. Rose in upstate New York and Albany, and now I'm in the Bronx, New York, so which is kind of where I grew up around there. I grew up in the suburbs right near there. And just getting into it was because one of the big things that we do as school psychologists, whether we like it or not, is the identification of learning disabilities and dealing with behavioral issues, emotional and social-emotional issues. And what you start to see is just this lots of evaluations. And you're like, why is this kid being evaluated? And also, what have we done for this child prior to doing any evaluation, before we identify that kid with some type of issue that's internal to that kid? And what's been going on for so many years prior to really MTSS taking really hold on the schools, I think it was, how are we triaging this? What things are we doing in the regular classroom? And stop thinking about special ed as this magical place that could somehow cure all ails. And also, you know, we have to address the social, the cultural and linguistic issues that go on in our schools. And so we see this high rate of children from minoritized populations being referred for an evaluation or for it to be in special education or to be kicked out of school. So it's really just trying to come up with a way to say that, you know what, some kids need a little extra help. It does, you know, an extra dose of learning about reading, writing, or math or behavior, rather than saying that they're learning disabled or have an emotional disorder. But it still goes on today that we just go right to it. That kid is not responding how I want them to respond in my class. So clearly there's something wrong with the kid, rather than thinking about what we're doing within our own classrooms. And again, and everyone's working really hard in the schools, but many of us aren't sure of what to do with a lot of these kids because it's part of our training and what we feel comfortable with just getting into the field of education.
I mean, like, I think that's a big part of it, is just this misunderstanding of, you know, the point of special education services.
Right.
And then also, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, like that lack of training. And we've talked about it on our podcast before of just, I think about my pre-service training as an educator. And I think I was not prepared for the things that I encountered.
Right.
And so I think you're right in there, and you're kind of nailing my first question just about sort of that, the misconceptions around implementing MTSS or even just what MTSS is.
Right.
And, you know, you and I talked before this call about, like, right, just some of your work across the country. And, you know, as much as I know there's so many districts that are doing MTSS already. Like, we work with districts all over the country, but we also know that there's some districts that are still discovering that and still mm-hmm. figuring out how that can look in their school. So right. what would you say are some misconceptions that you're encountering?
Yeah, I think, again, it seems to be a process to get a kid into special ed. I think it's still the general idea. And it's just not. It's trying to be preventative and to address as many kids as possible in that general ed classroom at tier one. And, you know, it's so funny you talk about how all these districts are implementing MTSS. But when you go in, everybody, if I say to different districts, so how's your MTSS going? Everybody starts to laugh. I mean, that they know that there's just these, it's all clunky because yeah. people are unsure of maybe how to teach reading in a certain way or how to teach writing or how many educators have I known to, if I say how many people here are bad at math, and a whole bunch of educators will raise their hand saying they're bad at math. Well, that makes math maybe not the best class to teach, especially. And again, it's no fault of anyone. Everyone's working really hard and really wants to do well by their kids. But I think there's some gap between some of that pre-service training to what they're supposed to be doing. But it ultimately is what people want is all the kids to get help. Mm-hmm. And I think the misconception is, how does that triage system work within MTSS?
Yeah. Well, and I even think, I mean, something I hear in what you're saying is that even this idea that if everyone doesn't have a foundation, the same foundation of what MTSS is and right. what its purpose is, then of course, you know, different schools in the districts are going to be operating differently, right? It's a mm-hmm. system level work that has to happen so that everyone is on the same page. Right. And so that then you can move forward, because otherwise it's a lot of like, then you're still continuing to have gaps in the way that you're helping and supporting students.
Right.
And so yeah. I think that, you know, and the other part that you kind of touched on was it's really overwhelming. Like when you ask that room of people, how's your MTSS going? And everyone's like, well, you know, right. because it's a system level work. It's so big. It can be really overwhelming. Do you find that there's a common pain point that prevents people from it not being overwhelming?
I think a lot of it has to deal with the data that is collected and if it's any good data kind of collected. And so if I start thinking about things like the science of reading or the research around reading and how to teach reading and explicit instruction, that's when you have when you start using maybe whole language type of approaches, the data that they're collecting is not really necessarily helping. People always talk about, well, he's on level E or level F or level B or level T. And then you say, so what is level B and when should they be at level C? No one could give you an answer. So they might be collecting supposed data, but the data is not helping what's going on in the classroom or give immediate feedback to the teachers as to the success and all the hard work that they're doing, as well as all the hard work that the kids are doing. So I think it starts to get frustrating. And they just, you could feel in those, especially the pre-referral meetings, is that the proper phrase? You know, some people have instructional support teams.
Yeah.
Right. So RTI teams, PSST, I don't know. It's just all these crazy.
There's so many acronyms.
Right. I had one that was like the pupil service support team. So they were the psst kind of thing. So I was like, who's keeping secrets? When you start to meet the people on those teams, generally they're the leaders within the school building, generally. But then you start to ask them, okay, so I want everybody to write down a whole bunch of different interventions you could do, say for word identification or for spelling or for phonemic awareness, let's just say. Would everybody have the same list on that team? And the answer is no. Again, that's just odd. And also there'll probably be one person who can't provide you anything. But those are the ones who are supposed to be helping the teachers try to implement something within their classroom and collecting the appropriate data to make sure that what's going on in that classroom or going at tier two, tier three is effective. Yeah. And if it's not, how to change those things. And I think that's still an area of confusion for lots of folks.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you talk about good data. So right. if you went into a school and you're like, advising them on how to gather good data? Where do you start?
You know, everyone's going to be probably doing like the STAR, NWEA, and those kind of things. That even that, I think that gives some good information, but people generally don't know what those numbers are. And I think you have to do really good professional, because people say, oh, he has a 235. You're like, oh, okay. What does that mean? And nobody can explain it. They just know to say the number in so many ways. But that's in general, and this is a rough sketch, is just really look because of ease. I want things to be easy within the classrooms to collect this data. Would be any of the fluency measures, whether it be from math fluency to writing fluency to initial sound fluency to word fluency, word decoding fluency, just to kind of so that it's just an easier probe to measure if that intervention or medication is working for the kids.
Yeah.
And people are generally are unsure of that. And I think it provides better information because when I go into the schools, one of the first things I tell them to say is that you can't say a kid is struggling and you can't say a kid's making progress because nobody knows what those two words mean.
Yeah.
If I have a sixth grader reading at a second grade level, and again, nobody even knows what that means, by the way, second grade level. When I say that, everyone just nods their head. But is there agreement? I don't know. But that if that kid makes good progress based on some of those fluency measures, at the end of the day, versus their peers, they're still struggling. But to say they're struggling would not be fair to the kid's work and all the that teacher's efforts.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is some of those, the good data around either progress monitors, the things that you can do once you sort of have identified, maybe even, you know, I see like the NWEA, some of those universal screeners, there's like, that's a first indication around right. like that there is a kid struggling. And then you're going to need maybe more diagnostic to kind of figure right. out where that area is. And so having those tools, rather than just say, oh, they got a poor score on their NWEA, you know, they're behind in reading levels. Right. I need to put them in reading class. Well, you still right. also need then to do the diagnostic to figure out what particular areas a student is struggling. So I think right. you're right in that good data has to come from good progress monitors and things that will actually tell you information that will help you set goals and
right.
and do the
and I'll say that those numbers off they serve as a cut score, which has been really detrimental in so many ways, because what happens if all your kids are below that cut score?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, everyone goes to tier two or tier three. Like, that's not possible.
But it does, I do think that then it does give an indication to building leaders, to district yes. leaders, that there is something that needs to happen at tier one. Because I have a district that I've right. talked to frequently, and they talked about how they're like the first couple of years of implementing MTSS, their tier two was really big. It didn't look like the ideal MTSS triangle.
Right.
And so they talked about, like, we finally got to a place where our triangle looks like we could actually use the cut scores we're supposed to use.
That's right.
And that's an accomplishment, because meaning that they knew that their tier one needed a lot of work.
Right. And that provides everyone with information. If everybody is below this certain level, well, then we all know we have to change this up. And that was especially important, especially around COVID and all that kind of information, that the kids who may have been in third grade the previous years, it's a different type of status when that group came through.
Yeah.
And how do you can't do the same scope and sequence as you did in maybe the previous years where the kids may have been successful.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you're kind of pointing out is that in reality, we can talk about MTSS best practices. We can talk mm-hmm. about all the right things that you should do and the ideal triangle. But in right. reality, it looks so much messier on the ground level with
yes.
districts.
Yes.
And, you know, whether people have the training, the right PD professional development, right? If you don't understand the NWEA and how the benchmarks work and what those should right. indicate as an educator, you're just given a test.
Right.
And so it's important to have that professional development around those right. assessments as well.
Right. And also it's just to say two things to that. One, I always get, I don't know, my hair stand on end a little bit now in terms of this thing called best practice. Like, if you're not doing best practice, then somehow you're wrong. Like, I just want to get to, can we get to good practice?
Mm.
It's like, can we get there first? It's almost like extra strength soap. I just want soap that cleans. But it's these words that really, they don't allow educators grace for taking chances, failing, and learning from those. It's you have to be the best all the time. And isn't that the pressure that all the educators feel all the time? That if we're not at our best, then we failed everybody, all untrue statements, but then that leads to burnout. And then you have lots of turnover, which also impacts the implementation of MTSS.
I love that statement because I do think that you're right in that, because there's so much theory around education. And I remember that as a new educator and even as further in my career, where I knew the right things that we were supposed to be doing, but it never quite worked out. Like, as much as you can plan a lesson and have a perfect objective and enter ticket and exit ticket, whatever, it never plays out in the way that you imagine it. And so, you know, some of that as learning as an educator is how do you adapt? How do you make the best of the resources you have in your hand? You know, how can you work together as a team to put together all your strengths and get PD that will help you further. And I think even just thinking about like good practice versus best practice, I think that that's a good way to think about it because I think we don't have the ideal scenario in every school across the country. There's, you know, there's no perfect school, I think is a good way to put it. Or perfect faculty, you know, I don't think there's any principal out there is going to say my faculty is perfect. No one, you know, makes mistakes.
But we have, and it's funny you say it's the lesson didn't go as I planned. It doesn't mean that it didn't work, but they don't have any data to see if things are working. So to allow for those little, listen, we have lots of little kids running around. It's always going to be insane.
And you know, as much as you can control a lot of things, there's just an element of we're dealing with humans and there's just a factor of there will be an element we can't control or we can't plan for. I think this also relates to kind of my next question because I think that it's hard to say, oh, we're doing best practices sustainably, right? I think that that's the part of MTSS that's hard is like, maybe we have a year that we're doing everything right. But then the next year you have a bunch of turnover and things change and you have to kind of start from scratch. And so there's this idea of like, how do we sustainably do MTSS to stick with it the long haul? Because MTSS implementation doesn't happen in a year. You know, it takes 3 to 5 years for it to really see the full effect. And so what do you think would make MTSS stick around for the long haul?
You know, I on the philosophical level in so many ways that it's how important the administrator is and the turnover that goes on in administration because of the pressures that are going on with a lot of principals and because you could have this groundswell where all the teachers and all the educators are into MTSS, but if that principal, that leader, that superintendent leaves and somebody else comes in, then things can get really go awry pretty quick. So I think that's part of the difficulty because we do, you always hear about a lot of the turnover going on in administrative levels. So any way that you're able to kind of create some more consistency, all the better. And that's a whole nother conversation in so many ways, but still it comes down to what does the data mean and what is the data telling us what we need to triage that each year it's always being reflective as to where did we go to and did we hit the goals or marks that we need to get to? And what are those things that we need to change? Much like the whole problem-solving model that should be used on the ground based on what's going on with each kid or each classroom is to do that as a school-wide type of issue so that you follow the same practices around that, but that you celebrate the successes and that you say, okay, so this is the area that we're going to tweak a little bit or that we're going to involve more professional development around. And it's to have those goals that you can't address everything all at once. All the veteran teachers out there know that that never works. When you try to just change the whole system right away, it's just you're going to push up that rock up the hill that's just not going to go up the hill.
I think you're right in the fact that that turnover with leaders does impact a lot of things. And I know we've talked about on the podcast before, and we have the conversation a lot, is that building MTSS a part of the system, not just about one building or one campus, really trying to build it a part of your district policies and sort of the way that your system runs helps create that long haul of MTSS. But that does take a lot of work and a lot of buy-in from people. So how do you build that system and get that buy-in from everybody?
One, it's about the policies and procedures have to be, you know, you want some clarity around that, but there has to be some flexibility because something is always going to come up. Good God, every single time. It's like, this is not in the policy, Matt. Like, what are we supposed to do here? But I think a big part of it is providing, like, and I keep going back to it, about really providing grace to the educators who are trying hard and to give them opportunities to practice the skills in a non-emotional environment in so many ways. So, for example, those pre-referral meetings that people dread. People don't have a positive feeling about the pre-referral meeting. Because it feels like they're just holding the kid from being provided with special education. Generally, that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. So I would want to hold a meeting. I would want to use that team to practice a different way of collecting data, everyone understanding about reading, and this is the intervention that you would kind of go through. Mm-hmm. And this is the data you collect. And just practice that a little bit and see the bugs that go through. So you're offering people the opportunity while you're still doing the crazy meetings, by the way. Because those things have to continue. But anyway, you're able to offer some of those opportunities, I think helps out. But it goes back to being really clear about the data that's being collected. And that sometimes you'll say, well, yes, he moved from, I don't know, 30 words per minute. Now he's at 50 words per minute. That's a good rate of improvement. And then the teacher will sometimes say, and again, there's no malice behind it, like, well, he's not making any progress. I'm like, okay. Let's go through this again. This is where he was. This is where he is. Where is the disconnect between what this data is showing clearly and where and how we're addressing this child?
Yeah.
And to provide some and say that you're doing a good job by this kid or this classroom. Because we also think about those tier one interventions. That's going to be really important.
Well, and I think that's the part of just educating your staff around the process. If you have that intervention plan and you're doing the intervention with the student and they are making progress, it's about growth, not necessarily meeting a benchmark, because it doesn't happen overnight. And sort of that idea that if they're making progress on this intervention that isn't special education, then clearly this is what they need, you know? And I do think sort of addressing those misconceptions that heading towards an IEP isn't the end all be all for a student, and really making sure that to address that those interventions, if they're working, let's continue.
And I think on that, it's not everyone's going to be a straight A student. That if we say like the top, let's use top 85%, where our top 80% is tier one in so many ways, that if you have 20 kids, that means, you know, 16 of the 20 are fine. But number 16 is at the cusp. They're not super awesome or super great. But people say that kid is struggling. The neck is too wide. They want every kid who's number 16 to be at number one. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's what does that look like?
Yeah.
That teachers are unsure of, or educators in so many ways are unsure of.
Mm-hmm. One of the aspects of MTSS is really that collaborative work of teams. I think you talked a little bit about this with you're talking about the pre-referral teams, or even just a student service team, whatever you call it, your MTSS team, that team can help identify some of those areas and start to set the tone for, you know, whatever's next, and building those pieces. So, you know, I would be curious to talk a little bit about, because, you know, we talk about some of those larger tier one issues. Some of those things like behavior are sort of that urgent fire that district, you know, leaders have to put out. How do you feel like that the districts can kind of shift from that mindset of like addressing only the urgent and being reactive to being proactive?
I think you would have a general gist, a general sense of what's the top issues that district or that building needs to address, and to be straight up and honest about it. that here is a tier one type of issue that the administration, we're going to develop policy procedures around to kind of address, but that we're going to, we need to kind of create some type of community. We need to say that these are the behavior. Everyone has the same voice, same line, same thing about this is what behaviors look like here. This is what we expect. Let's practice that within class. Let's practice this within all of our classrooms. Now, if we start to, what you start to see is that when you start doing some of the practice, if you front load the time in addressing some of those behavioral type of issues initially, you save time on the back end. Mm-hmm. But people get so worried about trying to get all the academic stuff right away. Then there, again, there's a whole mismatch. And also if you have a whole bunch of kids that have difficulty reading or writing within your class, well, then behaviors are going to go skyrocketing as well. Yeah. Yeah. So if we're not addressing, like, so what is the, what are those issues that we could address as a community, as a whole school community? And how can I really think about my whole class and what do I need to do with my class?
Yeah. Well,
which is easier said than done. Good God.
You know. Yeah. Easier said than done. I mean, all of this we say, you know, right. We kind of say we're not using best practice, maybe just good, right. Good practice as best you can in your context, because I think that matters, right? Like the context that you're in, a lot of times you can look at research, but that research is done in a context that's maybe not similar to yours. So you have to sort of take that in account. Kind of just to wrap up, I would love for you to talk a little bit about if there's a district out there that's starting their MTSS journey, what's one piece of advice that you wish that every school leader or even district leader knew before diving in?
For me, it's do their leaders have a good sense of what explicit teaching is or direct instruction is? Do they have a sense of what the science of reading is or the writing or math? Do they have leaders within their schools that can provide better support around those things? If not, you need a heavy, again, that's a tier one kind of thing. What do we need kind of thing to really address? And that's, so let's talk about reading for a second. That if you're doing a program that has, the research clearly shows that it does not help out lots of kids to learn how to read, you're going to say that all my kids can't read, and you're going to put all the blame on the kids rather than what the curriculum is. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have that understanding of that, we're, it doesn't matter what you do until you understand what are the bedrock that you need in order for your children to be successful.
Yeah.
From behavior to academics. And for them to be really reflective of their things that they're strong on as a leader, and where they need to reach out for more assistance. That, you know, and again, it's not picking on one group in so many ways, but not all reading specialists are special at reading. Right? They just got the gig. But can they, because they are interested in reading, can we expand upon their knowledge base and how to mm-hmm. implement those things? Because that person is passionate about that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think it makes sense to really make sure that everyone has, because, you know, I think a quandary that many districts are facing now is they're having lots of new teachers or a lot of people, right. as we've had a lot of turnover, just people who are newer at the job and that need that professional development mm-hmm. and that training to be able to implement tier one, having solid right. tier one curriculum
right.
that is research-based and high quality, like all of those things that right. you would need in a tier one curriculum, and have teachers trained on it. Because I've been handed a curriculum and haven't been trained on it. And I could say as a middle school English teacher, I was not trained in reading and the science of reading. And so right. having that training made a big difference in how I approached my instruction. And so making sure that your teams and your people, and I think even administrators have that background, have access to some of that training is so essential.
Right. I think, especially if you go at National Center for Teacher Quality, they do a really good job of kind of showing what teacher education training programs, and for all different educators, not just teachers, for all different types of educators, in some ways, of just at one point, and this may be like 10 years ago or something like that, but still, that means these teachers are still out there, educators are out there. I think it was like 2% of graduate teacher education programs gave enough information for teachers to teach math effectively. 2%. So again, you could be bad at math, but you know 2% is a bad number. So, but that puts teachers right behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
And it's just do this math curriculum, but they're not necessarily sure of what to do. So I think it all the reform has to start there, but that we're on the ground. We are dealing with it now. These are the things that we can do. Maybe introduce maybe morphology for about 5 minutes into every single class. That's a good tier one type of it. That's, we're not asking you to change the whole darn thing.
Yeah.
But here's, can we do 5 minutes of this? Can we do 5 minutes of that in this other class? Can we make sure that we're arguing cross-curricularly? I can't believe I said that smoothly. that everyone is doing the same thing and are on the same page about things.
Yeah.
From reading to social studies to science, and especially when we get into math, how are they teaching, say, morphology to make sure that people understand what those different math vocabulary terms might mean?
Yeah.
The better the math vocabulary, the better you are at math.
Yeah.
So the teachers just look at the different numbers. They know 2 + 2, but do they really understand the math vocabulary, which will make them a much better math student later on?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, all of what you said is correct. Man, we could probably talk. Yep. I say this often to guests, but I'm like, right. Oh, this is a topic we could talk about for several hours. But mm-hmm. I appreciate sort of your perspective is just as you've worked with lots of different schools across the country, even just to have that idea of let's throw out the word best practice and just say good practice. Let's, talk about having good data that really gives insight that, that people need. So, thank you so much for being here. Hopefully our listeners can kind of gain a little bit from this and, I'll share sort of how they can contact you and, if they have more questions that they might have. So,
And if folks contact, I have lots of different websites and lots of different resources. I'm happy to share and provide and give that to folks. And if people just want to call and just kind of talk about things, I'm always around for that. It makes you feel like I have friends. So I get very excited about it. So, but always happy to be a resource.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.